Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? 'Cause Stone Cold said so.
Hey guys, what is up, and welcome to the inaugural Wrestling Rivalries podcast. I thank you all for joining me tonight, or today, whenever you may be listening. And obviously you guys know me from the last year and a half, I'd say. I've been part of the WWE podcast with Matt. So just to give you a little background on my history as a wrestling fan, if you guys had not already known. So I started watching wrestling religiously, I would say, around 2000. I remember the first WrestleMania I ever tuned into was WrestleMania 2000. That was main evented by The Rock in a Fatal 4-Way match with Triple H, Mick Foley, and Big Show for the WWF Championship. So I came in right around the tail end of the Attitude Era, but really, really grew up with the Ruthless Aggression Era. Rock is my favorite of all time. Anyone who knows me close knows that to be a fact. But look, I'm more of a nostalgia type of guy, and if you've heard me on Matt's show over the last 18 months, I'm sure that was pretty easy to draw to as a conclusion. So I approached Matt with the idea to come up with a rivalries-oriented show, because he does do wrestling nostalgia, but when I listen to it, I often want to go deeper on specific matches. Like, I remember he reviewed a three-part show of The Rock vs. Steve Austin, which, in my opinion, is the best rivalry of all time. So, look, I'm open to ideas. Email Matt and he will relay it to me, or you can DM me on Twitter at ADeMarco25, and perhaps I'll review it. And just as a side note, like I said, I was mostly a Ruthless Aggression, tail end Attitude Era guy. There was a period where I rarely watched wrestling from around 2008 to 2011. I was really disconnected from the product, so if you can avoid rivalries that took place in that time, I would greatly appreciate it. So looking to today, we're going to kick it off with a feud that has flown under the radar, at least in my estimation, and that is Kane versus Shane McMahon, that started in the summer of 2003 and spilled all the way to Survivor Series. Now, just to give you some perspective and put you into that time of wrestling, you know, Kane was coming off of, I would say, an infamous feud, for lack of better words, with Triple H over the World Heavyweight Championship. And, you know, it led to the infamous Katie Vick angle and ultimately culminated with a championship versus mask match, which would end up Kane losing, demasking, and kind of going on this demonic run in the summer of 2003. He was partnered with Rob Van Dam at the time, turned on him, and he lit Jim Ross on fire. He was kind of coming out in shackles, Michael Myers-esque. And eventually what led to this was that Kane ended up tombstoning Linda McMahon on the steel grate of the stage, which led to Mr. McMahon coming out to confront him the following week on Monday Night Raw. Now, while this was going on, Kane actually started a mini feud with Stone Cold Steve Austin, who at the time was the co-general manager of Monday Night Raw. And on a side note, how great was that? How great was Stone Cold Steve Austin and Eric Bischoff as co-general managers? I thought they had great on-screen chemistry, and obviously at this point in his career, Stone Cold Steve Austin was anything but an in-ring competitor, but it was so nice to see him on television each and every week. But It ended up with Kane attacking Stone Cold Steve Austin, but at this time, there was a rule in place for Stone Cold Steve Austin that he could not attack someone physically unless physically provoked himself. So when Mr. McMahon, who vowed to, you know, make Kane pay for what he did, tombstoning his wife, came out to confront Kane, it was a much more amicable confrontation that many were expecting or many would have hoped. This led to Vince McMahon saying that, you know, like if he could channel this monster in very Vince McMahon-esque voice, evil, demonic type of way, that imagine what an alliance Kane and Vince McMahon could be. And then that led to Stone Cold Steve Austin coming out and inserting himself into the equation like he often so did when he had nothing else to do. So he had a bone to pick with Kane, came out and was doing everything in his power to provoke Kane. And Kane would not oblige, ended up laughing in Stone Cold Steve Austin's face, which eventually led to this. So as you just heard, Shane McMahon comes out, attacks Kane, knocks out his father, Vince, in the process, chases Kane up the ramp, beats him to holy hell with a steel chair, and eventually hits him over the head, knocking him off the side of the stage and into the electrical setup that Monday Night Raw used to have beside this stage. And if you guys don't remember, the stage back then was about a 15-foot drop-off from the actual floor. It was much more elevated. So when people used to go off the stage, it was a much bigger spot than you would see today. And man, just looking back on it, the stages and the sets used to be so much better back then. And, well, that's a story for another day. But look, this was the first time that we had seen Shane McMahon in just about a year and a half. And just to let you guys know, I have kind of like a point form breakdown of this feud just to, you know, for reference point off of WrestlingRecaps.com from an article from Bob Colling Jr. So thank you to him for this. But yeah, getting back to it, we were 18 months removed from the last time we had seen Shane McMahon on WWE television. And the last time we'd saw him was at Survivor Series 2001 at the culmination of the invasion angle. And he was actually part of that 5-on-5 traditional Survivor Series match. So it had been quite a long time since we saw Shane McMahon. And he really had never had any interactions with Kane. Obviously, there were some run-ins when he was leading the corporate ministry alongside The Undertaker, or when he aligned himself with The Big Show in 2000. But this was the first time that these two ever really locked horns. And to be quite honest, over Kane's career, which in my mind is a first ballot Hall of Famer career, aside from his never-ending feud with The Undertaker because of the storyline of them being brothers, Kane never really had very intriguing feuds or feuds that had much depth. He was always just kind of the monster that would get plugged in here and there to be added into a storyline. Like, for a long time on Monday Night Raw, he was the lone big man. A lot of the big men were over on SmackDown, like The Big Show and Brock Lesnar. So what would happen a lot of times on Monday Night Raw is that if you cross the GM, whether it be Stone Cold Steve Austin or Eric Bischoff, you would kind of get fed to Kane for as the repercussions for your actions. But while he was always a big part of the storyline, and while he was always a very well-known wrestler, Kane never really engaged in meaningful storylines. Like, at the WrestleMania that preceded this summer, WrestleMania 19, Kane didn't get on the card. You know, he was on a pre-show match, I believe a tag team contest with tagging with Rob Van Dam, who I alluded to before was they were in a tag team at this time. And the WrestleMania before that, he was in a singles match with Kurt Angle. The WrestleMania 17, he was in a triple threat match with Big Show and Raven for the Hardcore Championship. So look, Kane was never a character that had much depth to him as far as his feuds went. Besides that, with The Undertaker, he was always just the big red machine, no pun intended. But when they brought the mask, or better I say, when they took the mask off of him is when they really started to explore avenues that they could go down with Kane. And Kane himself had said when he appeared on Stone Cold's podcast a few months back that he felt the character was getting stale. He had been a babyface at this point for about 3 years running, and there's only so much you can do. You know, he came back to combat the un-Americans. He made that, you know, great return with like the kind of edited mask where his mouth was showing. But there was no new depth to his character, and taking the mask off was a way to explore that. So look, they get the big pop from Shane McMahon returning, knocks him off of the stage, and then we have a kickoff to this feud. Now, what I should note here is that Kane was already kind of engaged in a feud with Rob Van Dam at this point. You know, he had chokeslammed Rob Van Dam the same night he demasked, and they were tag team partners for almost 5 months at this point. So he didn't exactly jump into it with Shane McMahon right off the bat, as Shane McMahon actually had a Monday Night Raw match with Eric Bischoff, I should say, because Eric Bischoff had a beef with Linda McMahon at this time, kind of a power struggle going on. So what ended up happening here is that Shane had a singles match with Eric Bischoff at SummerSlam, which he won, and Rob Van Dam went one-on-one with Kane the same night, which Kane came out on top. The following night on Raw, Shane McMahon had an altercation with Chris Jericho, which led to a match between the two that night, which Kane subsequently interfered with. Now, what happened was is that they would brawl to the back as Kane kind of interfered in the match and made it a no contest. And I remember this like yesterday, because obviously Kane at this point was very emphasizing the whole that he was burned and fire. As I mentioned earlier, he lit Jim Ross on fire a month or so back. So they brawled to the backstage area, and Kane, getting the better of Shane McMahon, lit a dumpster on fire, engulfed with flames. I really encourage you guys to go check it out. It's, you know, I could play it for you, but it wouldn't do it justice. This is the type of clip that you really need the visuals. And he kind of picked Shane up almost like for a power slam and was going to dump him in. Shane fought out from it and gave him, I guess, a super kick to the midsection, and Kane fell backwards into the engulfed flames. And this is when you knew that, to quote Jim Ross, business was about to pick up. So obviously Kane was burned again, burned alive, but you know the whole backstory of his character, that he is almost immune to flames at this point. So the following night, the following week, I should say, on Monday Night Raw, Shane comes to the ring to cut a promo, and it was built that his dad had been warning him to make right with Kane. And let's take a listen on what Shane McMahon had to say the week after he sent Kane into a pit engulfed with flames.
That they're afraid that something bad is going to happen to me. Well, if something is bad, it's going to happen to me, I say, let it happen to me right here, right now.
So good. Shane's waiting for it. He's got the guts, folks, I'll tell you. He is fearless. For better or for worse, he is fearless.
So on a side note, how great is Eric Bischoff? From the theme song to his arrogance, just everything about him. I gotta say, he made the Ruthless Aggression so special because he really ate up all what it was to be about a heel. He emphasized everything there was to be about a heel general manager. And I know that in 2020, due to, you know, maybe PTSD over the Authority and their reign of terror over Monday Night Raw from, let's say, 2013 to 2015, where they opened every single show, we've been kind of exhausted from the heel Authority gimmick. But look, it is something that I believe is kind of a lost art. And Eric Bischoff, watching him back in tapes like this, coming out to tell Shane, you know, I'm going to get a front row seat to you getting yours and whatnot. But yeah, he comes out to antagonize Shane McMahon. And then we get this.
Eric, didn't you get enough at SummerSlam? And if you are the bad thing that's supposed to happen to me here tonight, then, excuse me for saying this, but that's a joke. Oh, you think I'm a joke? Well, how about if I get into that ring and show you just how funny I can be?
Uh-oh, why don't you?
Oh, my God! Whoever tried to warn Shane that something bad was going to happen, obviously
knew something bad was going to happen to this.
Sheamus, he's defenseless. He got hit in the head with those steel stamps, and now he's handcuffed.
So, obviously, as you heard, Kane's music hit. He comes out. The lights go out almost Undertaker-esque. And he just starts laying into Shane McMahon. Knocks him outside the ring. Clacks him in the face with the steel steps. And Kane bandaged up. Not overly, which I always kind of found weird. That they didn't emphasize more that he had been shot into, you know, literally a dumpster of flames. But he had a bandage on his arm. And then he pulls out handcuffs. And he starts handcuffing Shane and kind of has him over the head handcuffed onto the ring post outside the ring. And you think, oh, maybe he's just going to get a chair and lace into him. But no. Kane had bigger and more sadistic plans. And if you're a male, which many of you guys are, you may be a bit sensitive to what may come next. So if you guys can make out what happened, yes indeed, Kane attached jumper cables to a battery to Shane McMahon's testicles and electrocuted him. And he pinned him to the ring post with the steel steps handcuffed over the rope, over the turnbuckle, I should add. And Shane had nowhere to go. And he got a couple shocks to the family jewels, as Vince McMahon would say, or the grapefruits, rather. And then Rob Van Dam eventually came out with a steel chair to make the save. This ultimately led to a Unforgiven match that was a last man standing match. And I remember this match, guys. This was a really, really good match. And I should go back and watch it. But it all ultimately culminated with Shane losing as he climbed, which he was always so inclined to. You know, Shane, whenever there's a big, tall standing object around, Shane is going to make his way up there and do his patented elbow like he did unsuccessfully at WrestleMania 32 to The Undertaker in the Hell in a Cell match. And the ending to this match was somewhat similar to that Shane climbed the set, the big Titantron of the Unforgiven set, and he missed his trademark elbow from the high elevation, and Kane got the win as Shane could not answer the 10 count. And now, obviously, again, reading from WrestlingRecaps.com, so this is verbatim that I'm going to read this review on. The night after Unforgiven, Kane attacked Shane at the hospital he was recovering from. 2 weeks later, Shane returned and attacked Kane, luring him into the garage of the building. There, Shane would trap Kane in a limo and send Kane helplessly into a truck, nearly killing Kane in the process. Of course, it's wrestling, and Kane would be healed just an hour or so later when Shane issued a challenge for Survivor Series. Their match this time would be in an ambulance match taking place at the pay-per-view. On the last Raw before the pay-per-view on November 10th, 2003, the two literally sat at a table in a restaurant and issued threats to one another while eating dinner, which is remarkably considering everything that has transpired in the feud. And I remember that. That was kind of weird, but I guess they tried to humanize the feud because it was just dastardly act after dastardly act. And, you know, at this point, the feud was really coming to a culmination, and it was a lot of Kane getting the better of Shane, with Shane getting some shots in. And in their ambulance match, another great match, I should add, Kane ended up getting the victory and hitting the tombstone piledriver on the concrete floor. So, without question, this feud featured some over-the-top moments that is simply impossible to suspend your belief about. But at this time, look, guys, the product was just so damn good at this time that it was easy for you to suspend your belief. And I thought this was a really remarkable and memorable feud for quite a few reasons. Number one, I'm a big Shane McMahon fan, so obviously it's a bit of a subjective opinion, but I'm always intrigued in Shane McMahon feuds. And this was probably, I said it about Kane earlier, but you could probably make the case for Shane as well. This was the most intense feud I had seen probably to this day that Shane had been involved in. The most personal feud, the feud that meant the most, and probably the most memorable feud of Shane McMahon's career. Obviously, he's never been a full-time competitor. Maybe it's, you know, it's not fair to compare him to Kane, but at the same time, I can, off the top of my head, and feel free to call me out if I'm making a mistake here, but I cannot remember a feud that was as intense, as personal, that dragged on as long as it did, that Shane hasn't been involved in. And no, I'm not going back to last year with Kevin Owens or with The Miz, because that wasn't really Shane. That was more of like a authority type of thing with Drew McIntyre and Elias by his side. And in this instance, Shane was the babyface versus Kane. And I thought it furthered Kane's character because, again, this was, for all intents and purposes, the inaugural feud of a demasked heel version of Kane. The most monstrous we had seen Kane since he originally debuted in WWE or WWF at the time. And from Kane's perspective, this kicked off a pretty memorable 6 months for him, because he ended up going in the same night he beat Shane McMahon in the ambulance match at Survivor Series, he buried The Undertaker alive. He interfered in the Vince McMahon versus Undertaker Survivor Series match and helped Vince win and buried the dead man, or at that time, the American Badass alive, which led to the rebirth of the dead man gimmick. And I know that Matt reviewed this on one of the past wrestling nostalgias, but this led to a very precarious couple months for Kane. And at, I want to say it was Armageddon 2003, he actually main evented the pay-per-view in a triple threat match with Triple H and Goldberg for the World Heavyweight Championship. And then he obviously went on to fight The Undertaker, a returning Undertaker, the return of the dead man gimmick at WrestleMania 20. And I gotta say, I think this feud did a lot for Kane, because it was the first time, at least in a long time, that we got to see more of a humanized version of him, albeit a sadistic, demonic version, but still a human version. He got more talking, obviously, at the dinner table with Shane McMahon. We got to know what he was about. We got to know the horrors that went on inside his head. I would really urge you guys to go check out that interview with Jim Ross backstage, which led, as I alluded to before, to Kane setting Jim Ross on fire. And this, it just really went a long way into extending the depth of the Kane character. And again, this was a time that Kane was kind of running around in circles leading up to this, not having a big feud, not having any real legitimacy in the championship picture beside that couple month long feud with Triple H that led to the demasking and the Katie Vick angle. So I thought this was really a test run for a demasked version of Kane. And look, you look, what, 17 years later, and it did a world for him. And I felt like after this, they had a lot more avenues to go down with the Kane character. And he stayed demasked for, I want to say, 8 years. I guess he came back in 2011 with the whole Embrace the Hate angle with John Cena. But they had a really good run with Kane after this. But the one thing about Kane, which is weird to say considering the legacy he brings as one of the best of all time, at least in my mind, especially if you bring it from a big man perspective, is that, and correct me if I'm wrong, he only won one WWE championship. And I believe it was for one day in the first blood match to Stone Cold Steve Austin in 1999, I want to say. And he lost it the very next night on Monday Night Raw. And he did have, I think he won the ECW championship at WrestleMania 24. I think he had a run or two with the World Heavyweight Championship in 2009. But for all intents and purposes, he had one big run with a world title. Because when he held the World Heavyweight Championship, it had been dumbed down at that point. You know, once the brand split was abolished, I would say around 2008 is when they really started getting away from the inaugural brand split. The World Heavyweight title took a back seat, naturally, because if brands aren't their own two separate entities, there's only going to be one big dog title. The two world titles only work if the brands are completely separated. And I got to say, the newest rendition of the brand split in modern day WWE, WWE has done a very good job of doing that. And you see it now where Braun Strowman feels like a legitimate world champion because they've kept him completely away from the WWE championship on Monday Night Raw. And by the time Kane got his runs with the World Heavyweight title in the late 2000s, the brand split was pretty much over. And at that point, the World Heavyweight Championship was an afterthought in a big way to the WWE title. So considering this, Kane, the fact that he was able to make such a career without getting any big long-term looks with a world championship is quite remarkable. And again, correct me if I'm wrong, but to this day, I think that Kane only had one reign as WWE, or back then, WWF champion. And as for Shane, look, I still think Shane is great. Obviously, now in modern day WWE, he has brought back the Raw Underground. But if we look at his past feuds, obviously he had the run-in with KO and Miz in 2019 that I referred to. Him and his dad had a pretty lengthy feud with D-Generation X in 2006. And maybe we'll get to that on a future Rivalries edition. Because that was pretty good too. The summer of 2006 was highlighted of the McMahons versus D-Generation X. And he also had a good run-in with The Legacy that was led by Randy Orton in 2009. So look, I have a lot of time for Shane McMahon as a heel and as a babyface. In this instance, I think he played the babyface angle very, very well, coming back to avenge his mother. And this was one of the more underrated feuds of the year, and honestly, of that time in WWE, of the Ruthless Aggression era, because you got to understand, Monday Night Raw at this time, while it was great, it was pretty much a one-trick pony. You know, around this time, from 2002 to 2005, Triple H was essentially the constant World Heavyweight Championship given, except for a few short reigns by Chris Benoit here or Goldberg here or HBK here. He was pretty much World Heavyweight Champion for 3 years straight. And while Evolution was great, one of the best factions of that time, of that era, of all time, it was nice to see another storyline going on that didn't revolve around Triple H and Evolution and him getting that World Heavyweight Championship back. And I gotta say, if you guys are looking for a pay-per-view to watch and you have nothing to do, go back and watch Survivor Series 2003. What a card that was. like off the top of my head, and I swear to God, I am not reading the match card list. This is off the top of my head, but you obviously had the ambulance match between Kane and Shane McMahon. You had the Bury Alive match between Mr. McMahon and The Undertaker. You had Team Austin, which was led by Shawn Michaels and the Dudley Boys, Booker T and RVD, versus Team Bischoff, which was led by Randy Orton, Scott Steiner, Mark Henry, Christian, and Chris Jericho. The winner becomes the only general manager of Monday Night Raw. You had Team Lesnar with The Big Show, Matt Morgan, Nathan Jones, and the A-Train going up against Team Angle, which was obviously led by Kurt Angle. You had Chris Benoit, Bradshaw, John Cena, and Hardcore Holly. And I gotta say, this was the coming out party for John Cena, because this was the time when he switched to babyface. So I'm sure the match card had a lot more intriguing matchups. And I believe Goldberg went head-to-head with Triple H for the World Heavyweight Championship, because at this time, Goldberg was the World Heavyweight Champion in the fall of 2003. So, you know what? 2003 was a good year for wrestling. It really was. And it's weird to say that, considering that Steve Austin retired at WrestleMania 19, which was March of 2003. The Rock retired from full-time wrestling in 2003. And after his Backlash match against Goldberg, The Rock really left from a full-time schedule. And when he returned, it was really only part-time. So 2003 was a real transition time in WWE, and this was a storyline between Shane and Kane that really helped them through that time and take them into the next generation. So look, guys, I'm glad you enjoyed the inaugural Rivalries edition of the WWE podcast that will be coming to you each and every Friday. I will be back next week. Not too sure what I'm going to review yet. If you guys have suggestions, DM me on Twitter or email Matt at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. Not sure if that's it. I will get back to you with that. If not, check out one of his shows. You know the drill. Anyway, guys, take care and look to talking to you again next week.